buying in or backing out? What do the experts have to say about Florida State in 2025? We're going to break all that down for you guys in this episode. And of course, we are going to react to what they have to say, and we're going to share whether we think these takes are fair or foul. So, man, a lot of football talk. Excited. Before we jump into that, Michael, how are you, my friend? And thanks for joining me for another episode.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jesse. Can you believe we are about 50 days to college football? Literally, we're about 50 days.
Next month.
And so now we're weighing in and seeing what the experts think and whether or not we agree with them. So let's get in the episode.
Exactly, man. Florida State has a football game next month. Literally next month, man. So excited for that. And so this is something that we do every year in the preseason. We run this episode through and kind of share with you guys. You know, I'm still old school, Michael, and maybe it's fitting that I got the throwback jersey on. You know, had to go thrifting with the wife yesterday. Go. But I was able to come out with a little bit of gold for me. I was able to find a throwback Florida State jersey. And, of course, you know I had to pick it up because
right. It
belongs to be with a Florida State fan as I live here in the Carolinas. So, but, yeah, we do this every year, man. I'm a throwback guy. I love the college football magazines. I still like to get the hard copy and read it. And so we pretty much go through what a lot of the experts, air quotes, experts have to say about Florida State in 2025, because you've heard a lot of our takes and what we think of this team. And of course, we got a lot of preseason content coming up that we're going to be rolling out as well. But it's always kind of good to see what everybody else says about Florida State. Now, some of these are going to be good news for us to hear. Some of these are not going to be so fun to listen to. But that's why we're going to read and react to these ourselves and kind of share what we think about it, too. Now, the first thing I want to acknowledge before we jump into this, Michael, is because I know it's coming. Experts, air quotes, experts. I get it. Last year, the experts were completely wrong, and that is fair. And we were wrong, too. But that's I don't think anybody saw 2-10 coming out of last season. So this is kind of more of just a fun way, kind of more of a fun show, right? Because no one really knows what Florida State's going to look like in 2025, but we have a good feeling. And so I like to just kind of see what everybody else has to say here. And so, yeah, man, lots to get into with this one. Now, before we jump into the first segment here of the show, I do want to remind you guys that, like I said, we have a lot of preseason content coming up as Florida State is playing football next month. As we mentioned, now is a perfect time to hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, and stay connected to Plant the Spear. If you would like to become a member of the channel on YouTube and help support our efforts here, there are options available for that for one low price as a way to get some perks out of it and to help support Plant the Spear. So, man, excited for this one, and let's just jump right in. So, let me set the stage for you guys. I pretty much find as much information as I can throughout the national media outlets and things like that. Some of these are more kind of some stat people that I know and follow off Twitter that are going to make their way into these. This is primarily based on the Athlon preseason magazine and the Phil Steele preseason magazines. And I promise you, I will say Phil Steele's name wrong at least five times in this episode. It gets me every single time. And so that is primarily where I get this information from. So that's what we're going to read and react to today. Now, we have a bunch of different categories to go through, and we're going to start with kind of the broad spectrum, and that is the 2025 season win totals. So, Michael, let's start here first with the big boys out west. That is the experts in Las Vegas. Now, we know they put a lot of money into getting this right. Doesn't mean they always get it right, because they were pretty wrong last year about Florida State as well. But they have you sitting at 7.5 wins. Now, obviously, in all of these metrics that we're going to talk about, you can't win a decimal percentage of games. So they put that number right there at 7-5 because, you know, Michael, really, I think that's a really good fork in the road for Florida State. I think most of the other prediction models that you see have Florida State somewhere around that 6-7 win range, which we're going to talk about here in a minute. But then if you're kind of looking at the rosy side of things, that 8 win is where, you know, you run a little risk betting on that 8 win over there if you take that number. So I really kind of like that 7.5 number there. I would hopefully lean to the over to 8 wins here. Some of the other ones that aren't so rosy here, S&P Plus, which is put out by Bill Connolly of ESPN, has Florida State at 6.2 wins. Again, you can't win 0.2 games. So that looks like he's got us at around 6 wins there. Kay Ford, who is Kelly Ford, who is a stat person that I follow on Twitter, does a great job with a lot of things here. They have us sitting at 6.4 wins. So still, again, to the under on Vegas's win total there, Michael, with two pretty much 6-win season predictions here. Not looking so rosy for the Seminoles when you talk about a 6-win season here. I think you're borderline looking at, if those fall into place, man, I think some of the seasons that we're looking at here, that's borderline firing territory. You know what I mean? And that's kind of not what you want to see. But again, this is why we're going to read and react to what we think. And before I throw it back to you, one of the interesting things here that I saw for, you know, S&P Plus in Vegas are just a flat number. That's what they give you. But with Kelly Ford, I thought it was interesting because they do a lot more breakdowns into kind of into what he means by this. Now, one of the things that I thought, I gotta disagree a little bit here, is he has us going 4-4 in the ACC. That's pretty tough. So you're talking about four ACC losses here, and I'll give you those in just a second. Now, he does have our scheduled difficulty up at 24th. So Florida State does have, you know, those big weighted games, those four big games really do put a lot of weight into the strength of schedule that Florida State has. So again, what they do, what he does with his ratings is he kind of finds like what the highest percentage of where you fall on his chart. And six wins was the highest. That's why he goes with the 6.4. He gives Florida State a 75% chance to win six games. Mm. If you bump that up to seven, that percentage drops to 47%. If you jump that up to eight wins, which is where most of us think Florida State's going to land, that falls all the way to 20% chance for Florida State to have eight wins in 2025. And to go for nine wins, a surprise good season here, has us with only a 5% chance for Florida State to win nine games. So they're pretty confident. It sounds like a lot of these predicted models are very confident in that six to max of really seven wins. And with that, I do disagree. Now, to give you a couple more details here, they have us with four wins in the ACC as a 71% chance. If you bump that up to five ACC wins, only a 40% chance, which sounds a little crazy. Now, six ACC wins is way down the line, Michael, at only a 14% chance to win six ACC games. As you know, we play eight conference games, so that would be six wins and two losses. So that means if you're looking at maybe the two top teams in the ACC from what most people predict with Clemson and or Miami, that means they're predicting you're probably going to lose at least two more of these ACC games is what's most likely. And so we're going to share our thoughts on that in a second. Now, the likely losses from a percentage here, basically he breaks the schedule down and gives you a percentage chance for the teams to win in each one of their games. So the likely losses, according to Kelly Ford, is Alabama giving Florida State just a slim 9% chance to win that game. Miami at home is only a 21% chance to win. Clemson on the road is 10%, which is, you know, honestly, Michael, that kind of surprised me to see Clemson on the road at 10 and Bama at home at only 9. I would have thought you maybe would have had a little bit higher chance to beat Bama there. Virginia Tech at only 52%. This was one of those borderline coin flip games that they had here. NC State, Florida State only gets a 47% chance to win, and Florida down at 16%. So it pretty much what he's looking at in that 6-6 record is a loss to Bama, Miami, Clemson, NC State, Florida, and then that Virginia Tech game could go either way, but they're giving it to you. Sounds like he's giving you a 52% chance, but then counting it as at least partial loss there. So, man, not exactly the numbers you wanted to hear. I would say at least for this iteration, for this segment of the show, Michael, I'm going to pretty much disagree with just about everybody here. Mm. Now, can I see a situation where Florida State goes 7-5? Do I think that's a very likely outcome? Yeah, I can see that. I can name you probably the four or five losses with the big four in that road trip to NC State, but I disagree with these guys here. I think Florida State ends up with around eight wins in 2025, but man, not a whole lot of rosy picture, not a whole lot of confidence here.
No, it's not. And I actually went back and did some research real quick just to figure out where Florida State has usually been with the projected win totals. And so in 2020, Florida State was projected to win seven games. They won three. In 2021, Florida State was projected to win 5.5 games. They won five. So the under hit, but just barely, right? Yeah. Then in 2022, they're projected to win 7.5 games. They end up winning 10. In 2023, they were projected to win 9.5 games. They end up winning 13. And then in 2024, they were projected to win 9.5 games, and they won two. Yes.
Yeah.
If you're new to Plant the Spear, yes, we won two games last year, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
So in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, maybe this might be like that 2022 season where, you know, we didn't have a lot of hope going into 2022. Yes, they had finished 5-3 at the end of the 2021 season. So there was some like, okay, they're getting better, but you didn't go into 22 thinking they were going to win 10
games.
Yeah, we didn't think we were going to win 10 games. We thought, man, we'd be fortunate just to get back to a bowl. That's all we wanted. And then they end up winning 10 games. So yeah. Could this be similar to that, that we have a historic, terrible season, one of the most historic, terrible seasons in 50 years of college football history, coming off a 13-1 season? Could we then go back and actually like shock people and win more than seven games? I think Florida State will be plus 7.5. If I were betting, I'd bet the over on this. I think they win eight games. I feel confident that they could pull off eight game wins. Now, as far as the ACC concerns and where those four losses would come from, I do think you have to look at the big four, right? Clemson, Alabama, Florida, and Miami. I think those would have to be the big four. I do think that it can be easy to look at the big four. But there's a possibility. There's a reality somewhere out there, Jesse, that Florida State can win one of those four and lose a game that we did not expect them to lose.
100%.
They do go to Charlotte on Friday, right? They do go to NC State, a house of horror. The Carla Finley Stadium has been for Florida State, right? You know, it could be one of those games that we just did not. They do go play Stanford at, you know, ACC after dark at 10:30 Eastern time, right? So it could be one of those games that we don't expect them to lose, that they end up losing. And a game we don't expect them to win, that could actually they win. So I feel good about saying eight wins, but, you know, again, I'm with you. Anything below seven wins is not even borderline firing. Like, you should be fired on the tarmac. It's over.
Yeah. Yeah. And you factor in the four big games, right? The as your most likely losses, as everybody would probably pick to be. That means, like you just said, you kind of have to go through the rest of the schedule unscathed here and really have 100% hit rate. And is Florida State prepared to do that? Can you go win at Carter-Finley on a Friday night? Can you beat Pitt, who some of these prognosticators, as you'd like to say, they're a little bit higher on Pitt than people. Than some people may think. And so can you make it through unscathed? And I don't know. And if you don't, then you have to pull an upset in one of those big four games. So believe me when I say I can see a path to 7-5. That could be a loss to the four big games, and then maybe a trip up at an NC State or that trip out west or something. So I can very well see the 7-5 record. I just think Florida State does get a win in an upset in one of those big four. And I do think they probably do fall somewhere along one of those other games to that NC State or something like that. You know, the only thing for me is with the 4-4 in the ACC, that one feels a little bit tough here. But the tricky thing too, that I was going to mention with the schedule is if you think about, if you were to go 8-4, but then say hypothetically, two of those losses were to Florida and Alabama, well, those aren't ACC losses.
No.
So then again, you could be in a situation where you could be contending for the ACC as long as you can make it through your conference schedule relatively unscathed. But yeah, I mean, I think it is pretty interesting here to kind of see some of where they're at. Really, a lot of erring on the low side here at six wins. That's probably not what a lot of people want to hear. You know what I mean? It's really not. But I think a lot of people are going to be playing it safer this year with what they have. And, you know, again, and I'll throw it back to you. I wanted to mention that these computer models have proven to be wrong in the past, certain. Even like Las Vegas, who puts a lot of money into this, they got it wrong last year. So, I mean, these computers, they might have a virus. You know what I mean? So it could certainly be wrong. And we hope Florida State surprises to the upside. But I did find it a little bit interesting here to see that, you know, you're talking about a 20% chance to win eight games, a 5% chance to, you know, 40% chance to win five ACC contests. That seems a little low.
That seems very low. And the thing is, like, so let's say you just automatically gave Florida State the two losses in the ACC to Clemson and Miami. There's still six games that are winnable, right?
Yeah.
There's six games that are still winnable. If you're at 6-2 towards the end of the season, you're not only vying for the ACC still, you're vying for a playoff berth, right? You're still in the conversation. Regardless of what happens with Alabama and Florida, six wins in the ACC seems doable in my mind, right? Like, it doesn't seem like there's a 40% chance that they can do it. I think I would put that maybe around like 58, 59, 60% chance that you should be able to win six games in the ACC this year with a better roster, a better coaching staff, a more defined scheme, right? And presumably, according to the climb, a better quarterback.
Yeah. And you know, the funny thing is, realistically, when you talk about those ACC games, I mean, let's be honest, after last year, which was a surprise the way they played too, NC State is more about where it's at than who it's against, that you're in Carter Finley on a Friday night. So speaking of ACC, Michael, let's just stay in that vein with the ACC predicted order of finish for Florida State. And this is the one where I said is a little bit of a kind of cold water being thrown on you a little bit. This one's not so rosy, right? And so let's start here. ESPN, which, you know, we don't like them anyway, so we're not really going to pay attention to what they have to say. ESPN has Florida State here finishing seventh in the ACC. Now, keep in mind, this is now a 17-team conference here, so that is above middle of the pack here. Phil Steele has you tied for fourth. Now, ESPN does have Miami, which is, this is kind of crazy. They have Miami as the number one finisher in the ACC, bucking 21 years of history that says they won't be. They have Clemson at number two, SMU at number three. Phil Steele has you tied for fourth. He has Clemson at number one, SMU Miami at number two, tied there for two and three. And then tied for fourth is Georgia Tech and Florida State. So it's tied for fourth, but you're kind of actually down here at about fifth, which is, you know, that's okay. Phil Steele, he's a lot higher on Florida State than some of these other people, which I do like. Now, Athlon has you down here finishing seventh. So another kind of non-confident finish there for Florida State in the conference play. They have Clemson 1, Miami 2, and SMU 3, which is kind of the theme throughout the rest of the things here. Kelly Ford has you finishing 8th. So, Kelly Ford, welcome to Plant the Spear Show. This is probably your last time on it because we don't like this very much. He also has Clemson at 1, Miami at 2, and SMU at 3. FanDuel gives you the 7th best odds in the ACC at plus 3,100 to win that. They have Clemson with the best odds, Miami, Louisville at 3rd, and then SMU at 4th. Now, you know, if you think back, Michael, when you think back to these, when you think back to these teams that may finish at the top, like SMU last year, you know, they got lucky by Florida State being down and being a terrible team, because that was really one of the only big teams that they played from the ACC. You know, they didn't play Clemson in the regular season.
Right.
And then when they did, they lost. So schedule has a lot to do with where you finish too. Now, one thing that I do think is interesting, and we're going to talk about these in just a second, but when you talk about like the unit rankings and basically where like your quarterback room, your running back room, and all these rooms line up, where they stack up in the ACC, Athlon has 8 teams and Phil Steele has 6 who basically rank in double digits in the lower half of the conference in a majority of the categories, either all of them or all but like one. And this is where we talk about that strength of schedule, again, where we've talked about before on some of the reasons why Florida State should be better in 2025. Out of the 8 teams that Athlon has ranked kind of in the bottom of the conference, and out of the 6 that Phil Steele has, you play 4 of them from Athlon's list and 3 of them from Phil Steele. So to me, when you look at that, and that is UVA, Wake Forest, and Stanford. Phil Steele is a little bit higher on Virginia Tech. He doesn't have them as low as Athlon does. But to me, man, that almost looks like that's 4 games that you should win in the ACC, right?
Yeah.
And then the interesting thing here, I will say, that I think needs to be at least provided some clarification on, is when you look at Kelly Ford, a lot of his ACC projections are, you know, you look at Louisville has 4.6 conference wins, down to North Carolina with 4.1. So you have a lot of decimals in there too. So this could, you know, one game either way could launch you to 4th, could put you down at 8th. But again, I'll throw the slide back up here, man. Not a whole lot of even top 5 finishes projected for ACC, for Florida State in the ACC in 2025. And I'll throw it back to you on this, Michael. I'm not expecting Florida State to make an appearance in Charlotte, right? I'm not saying it's out of the realm of possibility. I'm not saying that. If you upset Miami at home, then you could be right there in the picture. I do think Clemson's probably going to win the ACC this year. If, you know, when we go to ACC Media Days in a couple weeks and I have to vote for my preseason ACC favorite, it's going to be Clemson. They have a pretty loaded team this year.
Right.
But I don't see Florida State finishing 7th and 8th in the conference behind a Virginia Tech, behind a Duke, behind, you know, some of these other teams. Man, I just don't see that being the case.
No, I don't either. And when I look at the schedule, and I get it. I get when you have such a drastic fall from grace. You know, it's not like Florida State fell down a story or two from a building. They fell from the top of the building to the basement. You know what I'm saying? They finished dead last.
As the saying goes, take the stairs up and the elevator down. Well, the elevator wasn't even there. We fell straight down the shaft.
Went straight down the shaft. Like the elevator workers can't even find us right now.
Exactly.
So I get it. I get it that then the temptation then is to say, well, yeah, there's no way they went out and could get that much better. But again, we have to remember, this is unprecedented what happened with Florida State. There's never been a team in college football history that have gone 13-1 and then only won two games the next season, right? And so you have to actually look at the talent on the field versus the talent of the opposition. And when you look at that, again, I see six wins. I see six wins in the ACC easily. When I look at the schedule, right, and I look at the fact that Florida State can, they should go to Virginia on Friday night and they should win. They should beat Pitt at home. They should go to Stanford and win. They should beat Wake Forest at home. They should beat Virginia Tech at home. They should have a really good chance if they play with their heads straight and all the voodoo from Carter Finley Stadium doesn't show up. They should win at Carter Finley Stadium. The only games that I can't confidently go in to say that Florida State should win, even though they get Miami at home, that should be competitive. Going to Clemson is that's just a whole nother thing. I'm just going ahead and chalk that up as a nail, right?
Yeah.
There are six wins easily, which says Florida State should finish somewhere between second and fourth, really.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that vein. That's where they should finish at. And I think that is viable. I'm not using my, and this is not, Jesse, this is not my fan lens, my bias of Florida State. I'm literally looking at the talent I know of the teams versus the talent I know with Florida State and where they're coming from. They should easily have six wins.
Yeah, and you know what's, I want to bring something up about that I think is important to remember when you talk about this team in 2025. And this is something that I mentioned the other night. If you guys want to check this out, I did sat down and did an episode with Eric from the College Huddle. I know we haven't mentioned it a whole lot, guys, but we are part of a national podcast network called the College Huddle. They have a YouTube channel over there. I just talked about Florida State in 2025 with them and can they bounce back. And one of the things that I mentioned was, this is the thing about the modern era, right, with the portal and all this stuff, and especially with just Florida State in general making all these changes, is it, you're right, it does seem like people want to be hesitant to put Florida State back in the limelight in 2025, and I understand that because we have to see this first. But there, I was looking the other day, and around 70% of this coaching staff had nothing to do with 2-10, nothing, not a single thing. Around 16 of your starters or so out of 22, and including some guys who maybe weren't starters, but just some backups on last teams who really didn't have a major impact. The majority, around 70% of your coaching staff and starters, had nothing to do with last year's team. Not a single thing. So I don't think it's far-fetched to be able to expect Florida State to have a completely different looking season than they did last year.
Right.
Because this is a completely different looking team than it was a year ago. And I think that is important to remember when you talk about where Florida State could or couldn't be this coming season. It's an entirely different team. It's an entirely different season. And so I do think it can look totally different. And we've seen throughout the course of the recent years with an Indiana, an Arizona State, these teams that can go from not to hot in a matter of one season by what they did in one offseason. And so I think that is important to remember too. But yeah, man, I think you should be somewhere around six wins in the ACC. And then, you know, you add the two wins, the kind of two gimme wins there, and that puts you at eight wins on the season. That puts you at six wins in the ACC. I think with that, depending on, you know, how some of these other teams stack out, because it matters what they do too, you should be, I think, towards the end of the year, you should be competing for a spot in Charlotte. I'm not saying you're going to make it. I'm not saying you're going to be the ACC champion. I'm not saying all that.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that you should be in contention at some point throughout the season for that ACC, and then you could maybe look at adding that ninth win in the bowl game.
And here's what I'll say. Projecting FSU to finish seventh, you know, I think what you said, seventh through eighth.
Seventh and eighth, yeah. Seventh and eighth is about it, yeah.
I just think that just is it's almost kind of like lazy. It's just like you didn't even do your research, you know, right? Like, it honestly ignores so many different factors. Like, yeah, okay, so the roster took some hits. We all know that. But Mike Norvell has been, you know, he went and instead of getting, you know, potential, we talked about this, he went and got production. Yep. Right, this year the schedule isn't exactly murder's row in the ACC as well. There's a couple of tough games, but like I just said, there are plenty winnable ones, especially if this new look defense of Tony White actually holds up. And FSU's biggest problem last year wasn't necessarily talent, it was finishing and consistency in games and actually playing up to their talent. If they can get steady QB play, right, which You know, again, according to the climb, we got the next coming of Charlie Ward. And if the OL line gels, like we all hope they will, I mean, we literally got five new starters that are probably going to happen on this OL line. They'll be right back in the mix. So to me, putting them at seventh or eighth, and what that basically means is that they're barely like on bowl game conversation. If they're seventh or eighth, they're probably on the outside almost looking in. That's just ignoring everything that Mike Norvell and his staff have done during this offseason. And again, outside of Clemson and Miami, like this is a team that should be viable for a conference championship berth. Like it, six wins is not just in the realm of possibility, but is should be expected. They shouldn't be expected to win six wins.
Yeah, no, I agree. And granted, I get it. We were dead last in the ACC last year. I get it. But, you know, like I talked about, man, this is a different year with a different team. It's a different season. And so, yeah, if you can get six, you're in the conversation. Maybe you pull an upset against Miami, and now you're 7-1 in the ACC. Right. Who knows? Again, it's hypothetical. It's hard to predict, man. But it's just I think some of these are a little bit on the low side. I think what you're seeing here a lot is there's a lot more than maybe should have being tied to last year. I get it, man. I understand that. But if you can see, and hopefully we don't see this ever again, but if you can see them go from, you know, negative 11 losses from 13-2, they can certainly, and they've been from 5-10, you could certainly see them jump right back up. And so that's what we're hoping for. But keeping it moving here, couple of things I do want to throw out real quick. I didn't really make a slide for this. This is just real quick because you talking about like in contention for a bowl and just kind of a crapshoot of predictions. I did see two bowl projections for Florida State this year. So, hey, at least they have us in a bowl, Michael. The first one was from Athlon. They have Florida State playing Washington in the Holiday Bowl out in San Diego, California. So I can't really say that's one I would be excited about, right? Yeah. Not so much. Now, the next one I think would be interesting, Michael, and this is, comes from Brett McMurphy of On3. Florida State versus Colorado in the Sun Bowl in El Paso, Texas. Now, the bowl itself isn't that exciting.
It's a dud, but...
But Florida State versus Colorado would be headlines for sure. Man. That would be Deion a huge, man. Yeah, Florida State versus Deion. Essentially, you can say Florida State versus Deion because that's what they would have as. That would be interesting, man. But that's two of the bowl projections that I saw for next season. So I think that one, man, if you play Colorado in a bowl, that'd be pretty interesting there.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to see... Because that would just draw the headlines, right? It'd be wild. It's prime time. It's Deion Sanders. It's Florida State. It's the Travis Hunter saga. It's all of that come back, right? And of course, as Florida State fans, we tune in because it's our team. And for most of us, we'd want to beat the crap out of Deion Sanders' school. So it'd make a lot of sense for us there. Now, I will say though, if we're in the Sun Bowl. Typically, the Sun Bowl is reserved for teams that are
didn't do so good.
So if we're in the Sun Bowl, it would truly be Florida State versus Deion Sanders because Mike Norvell should be fired.
Yeah. Deion might be auditioning for a new job.
So true.
But I mean, at least you sounds like you're going to get back to a bowl. That's what they're thinking, which would be good. We're just kind of hoping for a little bit better bowl than that. Now, the next thing I want to bring up here that I think is interesting is the unit rankings that they do. And this one, we're going to go primarily with Phil Steele's here because Athlon only does top 10. And newsflash, Florida State didn't make it in any of the top 10 nationally. So let's go with some unit rankings here. And some of these I find interesting, right? So we'll pop it up. We'll start with offense here. So how this is laid out, if you're watching on YouTube, is the first number that we're going to read is Athlon's ranking. This is in the ACC. Out of 17 teams, the second number is Phil. There it is. There's at least one. Phil Steele's ranking in the ACC. And then the third number that you're going to see here is going to be how Florida State ranks nationally in Phil Steele's position group ranking. So first here up at quarterback, this is kind of consensus, man. You see Athlon here with Thomas Castellanos at 8. Now, Athlon doesn't give a lot of explanation, but Phil Steele actually does give some explanation. And so he actually does rank it based on your entire quarterback room, not necessarily just your starter. But he has us at 9th here because let's be honest, man, when you talk about Thomas Castellanos, you also have to consider that he may get banged up throughout the course of the season in Gus Malzahn's offense. And what you have behind that is a guy who's proven to be very up and down. and then a true freshman. So I think that does kind of have to factor into your quarterback room as a whole. But the eighth best quarterback, according to Athlon, in for Florida State, the ninth, according to Phil Steele, and 43rd in the country, 43rd nationally. So to me, man, I think that probably it's hard to say, man, because there's actually some decent quarterbacks in the ACC here. I think Thomas Castellanos, that's a fair rating right now. Let me just say that, because what you saw in the 2022 season from him, or 2023 season from him, his first year at Boston College, there was a lot of interceptions. The completion percentage wasn't really there. He didn't throw for a ton of yards. He ran for 1,100 yards. I think there's that. That is important to factor in, because I don't know how much these guys factor in that dual threat ability. You know, and then you have last year where the passing improved, but the rushing fell off a cliff. Now, that had a lot to do with the system that he played in. So I think based on what he has done, his current body of work, I don't think it's out of place to put him, you know, somewhere around the middle of the pack ACC. Again, 17 teams. I think you're somewhere right around the middle. I think that's fair rating. 43rd nationally is probably fair too. Now, do I think he can finish with a much higher rating than that by the time things are over? I do think so, because when you look at this, Thomas Castellanos has the potential to have the best season that he's had yet in this offense. So not too rosy on Florida State's quarterback situation, but I think could surprise you for what maybe where he finishes at the end of the year, because I think he could have a pretty good season.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I actually don't disagree with this. And listen, I know I've been joking about the climb and what they've said there. They may have exaggerated just a little bit on that, but you know, he's a dynamic quarterback with his legs. You know, his passing is the thing that's kind of really kind of hampered him. Jesse, I just did the math on this. He has a 0.58 touchdown to interception ratio, which basically means that he will throw an interception every 1.7 touchdowns. So about almost two touchdowns, then he'll throw an interception. So like, that's not a great ratio for a quarterback. Right. Now in this system with Gus Malzahn, you're going to be taking a lot of deep shots, a lot of east and west throws. So that should hopefully cut down on the interception ratio, and it'll obviously allow to use his legs. But I would agree that 43rd ranking in the nation is accurate. I don't know if he's the eighth, best quarterback in the ACC. I think he might be just a tad bit higher than that. But again, you know, they're predicating this off of stats and seasons and their own prognostications.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing that's important to remember is I think when you go to all encompassing, when like, okay, yeah, maybe as a pure passer, of course, Kate Klubnik's going to be better. Right. And I'm not saying Thomas Castellanos is better than Kate Klubnik, but I'm saying like when you factor in the legs, I think that does bump his rating up a little bit. And I think, you know, again, you surround him with the weapons that he's going to have here and all that stuff. And you know, it's funny you mentioned like some of the things, maybe I think they are getting a little bit carried away with some of these things that they're hyping him up about. But I do like that, man, he's putting in the work and he has the confidence. And so I think he has the potential there. Now, going down the list here to running back, Athlon has you as the seventh best running back room in the ACC, fourth best in the ACC, according to Phil Steele. I like that four ranking a lot better than I like that seven ranking. And then 34th in the country, according to Phil Steele. I'm going to lean towards Phil Steele here. I think you probably are one of the top five in the conference. I'm not going to say you're number one, because you don't really have that bell cow that we've seen produce consistently right now. But at the end of the day, man, I think with the Gavin Salchuk addition, a guy who has put up like 900 yards at Oklahoma before, I think with bringing in Chroma, the talented freshman, that's kind of your top end talent there. And then you're also pretty deep. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the position groups themselves. Man, I will say I think seven sounds a little bit low, and I think four sounds pretty fair. And I think 34th in the country is probably about right, because like we said, man, I like the depth of talent that you have. You just don't really have that like household name yet, but that doesn't mean they can't emerge. So I'm pretty fair on four. I'm pretty foul on seven.
Yeah, I would take that approach as well. You know, I think four might feel I would be good with that. You know, I mean, you got Gavin Salchuk coming in, like you said. I mean, his 2023 season, he ran for over 744 yards, had 9 touchdowns, you know, 14 receptions, 94 yards. He was a dynamic back before he got injured yet next season at Oklahoma. So if he's fully healthy again, you have a deep room. You got, you know, Cam Davis, you got Roydell Williams, you got the freshman and Kuzma coming in. You obviously, you got all the other other guys back as well too. So you have a really, really deep running back room there. I think you have options. You have strength. You have bulldozing. You have lightning quick. You have twitch. Yeah. You have receiving. So you have so much that you can do with that room there. So, yeah, I would say that's without fully knowing how everyone's going to operate in this offense, we already know that Gus Malzahn is going to run the heck out of the ball.
Yep.
60% of his play calls on average are running plays. So you already got a running back in Thomas Castellanos, and then you have the other running back as well too. So I would imagine that's going to be a fair preseason assessment.
Yeah, I don't look at our running back room and say I don't like that guy for correct. Anybody. I just look at it like I just don't know maybe how good you can be.
Right.
Now the next position group here, man, this is a pretty big gap between what they think. And I actually am gonna definitely side with Phil Steele here. And that's not just because he's the higher ranking, and that's at wide receiver. Athlon has you as the 8th best wide receiver core in the ACC. I think that's kind of some bunk right there, if I'm being honest, Michael, to call it like it is. Phil Steele has you at 2nd and 22nd in the country, top 25 wide receiver unit in the country. Now, let me first say one thing about this. It is a very real thing that your receiver core can be limited by your quarterback play. I think that is fair to say. But with that being said, I do really, really like this receiving core. I am probably a lot higher on this receiving core than a lot of other people are. I love Deuce Robinson and the size that he brings. He was pretty productive there at USC as not really as their feature receiver, still putting up around 300-400 yards a season there. I am so much higher, I think, if he can stay healthy. Now, that is the caveat with Squirrel White. I am so much higher on Squirrel White than I think most of the country is. I think he is probably one of the most overlooked receivers on this team, in the conference, and in the country. The guy put up almost 900 yards or something like 900 yards a couple years ago. Had a 100-yard game against Alabama at Tennessee there. I think he is dynamic. You add in Javon Boggs, who is a breakout potential freshman. You got LaWayne McCoy. You got all these other guys. You know, and then they don't separate your tight end room from wide receiver. So I think you have to add that in too. And I will say Athlon doesn't separate that, but I know Phil Steele, as we'll talk about later, is high on our tight end room. And I think that brings this rating up here some. But man, I mean, you know, when you talk about Landon Thomas, when you talk about you know, the kid that came over from UCF, the tight end there.
Randy
Pittman. Yeah. I think when you look at all these guys, Amari Williams, man, I think you have a receiving core that I'll just put it like this, Michael. I think they're going to be more limited by the quarterback play than the quarterback play is going to limit the wide receiver.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Than the other way around. So I think this wide receiver core can get the absolute max potential out of Thomas Castellanos as a quarterback, as he has the ability to do, because I think he got some real talent outside here.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I mean, when you look at just the top two wide receivers, right? So you start with obviously the big prize of the offseason, Deuce Robinson coming over from UCF, right? His best season was last year. He had 23 catches, 396 yards, 5 TDs though. 5 TDs and 23 catches, which he was a red zone specialist. They also had a terrible offensive line. Miller Moss wasn't as great of a quarterback as what he experienced with Caleb. And so, but he could be super dynamic. So he's kind of like your Johnny Wilson, who didn't really get readily used, get in a better system. He explodes, right? But then you talk about your boy Squirrel White, man. I mean, come on. Freshman year, 30 catches, 481 yards, 2 touchdowns. Sophomore year, 67 catches, 803 yards, 2 touchdowns. Last year before getting injured, 34 catches, 381 yards, 2 touchdowns. Average 16 to basically is averaging about 13 yards a catch, on his career. I mean, if he can stay healthy, he's going to be one of your fastest, most dynamic playmakers on the field, right? And so you could see that if Thomas Castellanos is anywhere in the decent, just decent, these wide receivers can be game changers for you. But like you said, I totally agree with you. I feel like your quarterback's going to limit more your wide receivers, and your wide receivers are going to limit your quarterback. Yep. Was last year, they limit each other.
Yeah, exactly.
It was the blind leading the blind.
Or the brick leading the blind, whichever you want to call it there. But I don't think that'll be the case, at least from the wide receiver perspective this year.
Yeah, I'm definitely high on this group. I really am. I think there's a lot of potential in that room. Now, the last one here is offensive line. Seventh according to Athlon, sixth according to Phil Steele, but 28th nationally. So a much, sounds like, improved offensive line here, kind of middle of the road, upper half of the ACC. Look, man, if there were 17 teams in the ACC last year, we'd have had to make a provisional 18th for the offensive line for Florida State because it was just that bad. It was so awful. But this is another group that I think you did really good going out and fixing some things through the portal. Four of these, again, this is what I'm talking about when you look at, oh, well, this happened last year. Right. And four of your starters are going to be brand new. And the fifth starter, Richie Leonard, only got to play about three games and looked pretty decent in the couple of games that he did get to play. So it's essentially a brand new offensive line here. I really like a lot of the pieces. I like probably about the sixth and seventh man you got. I'm a little bit worried about the depth here throughout the course of the season. But man, I actually really think this offensive line is going to make a massive turnaround, and especially when you consider being under new coaching as well. So I'm fair with sticking kind of in that upper to middle half of the ACC for now, but I think they have the potential to finish the season as one of the better units in the ACC if they can stay healthy. And I know that's saying a lot for what we saw last year. I get that. But again, man, I really like some of the pieces that you brought in on the offensive line.
Let me give you some stats real quick about this offensive line, just from the rushing perspective, since rushing is going to be our predominant thing. In 2020, Mike Norvell's first season, FSU offense averaged 5.2 yards a carry. Okay. In 2021, FSU offense averaged 4.8 yards a carry. Okay, so a little bit down, but not too bad. In 2022, when they went 10-3, FSU averaged 5.5 yards a carry. So they went back up. All right, great. In 2023, the 13-1 season, they went down significantly, almost a whole yard per carry, but they were still at 4.5 yards a carry.
Yeah.
And then the bottom fell out. They fell beyond the elevator shaft. They're in the core of the earth, 2.9 yards per carry. There is nowhere else to go but up. That's all exactly. I'll say. There's nowhere else to go but up.
1,000% agree on that. So now let's flip over to the defensive side, and we're going to start with the defensive line here. Athlon has you as the sixth best defensive line in the ACC. Phil Steele has you at fifth, 25th nationally, though. So top 25 defensive line here. And I will say this, Michael, I think a lot of this is predicated on Daryl Jackson having a big season.
Yeah.
I think that is really what they're looking at here. Now, I understand, like, when you talk about Clemson has a loaded defensive line and Miami has a pretty daggone good defensive line this year. So that's where, you know, you have to look at you compared to everybody else, right? That is part of it. I understand that. I think really the trepidation with Florida State's defensive line here is because we've talked about this before. You have, you know, a Daryl Jackson who is your kind of your leading star power that has never really had that breakout kind of season. But he has the potential at 6'6", 350 to be that guy. But then, you know, you look behind that. You got some guys who were, you know, average last year, pretty good, but not great. You lost Josh Farmer. You lost these guys. Then you have James Williams, who, you know, we all have a really high expectations for. But, again, he was a package player there at Nebraska. You have Jason Jenkins from Tennessee, who could be a really high upside player, but he was a depth player last year. So I can understand some of the kind of middle of the road rankings for this unit because of the unknown of what they have. But I think when you look at what some of these pieces, when you look at the talent level that you have on the defensive line here, yeah, man, I do like that kind of that top 25 ranking nationally. I like that kind of, you know, because again, when you talk about sixth and fifth in the ACC, that's in the upper half. And so I think that's a fair ranking. I think this is one where you have more talent, less production to rely on, but you've seen those pieces. It's not paper talent, right? It's not a recruiting ranking. You've seen these guys do it on the field. They just have never had to do it as the starters, maybe outside of Daryl Jackson when he was at maybe another school. But I think you have a lot of talent in this defensive line room, and so I understand these rankings.
Yeah, absolutely. I can get these rankings. I mean, you're coming off a year where your defensive line basically gave up 4.6 yards a rush carry You know, like that's not good. The best in the last 5 years, the best was 2021 when Florida State only gave up 3.7 and they went 5-7 that year. That was probably the best defensive line they had at the time. You know, my biggest concern going into the season is depth. Do they have the depth and sustainability? Because let's say those guys are decent. Let's say they're decent to good enough, right? But what happens when they tired out? Is that second wave coming in?
Yeah.
Is that going to be able to help sustain that as well too? And then Jesse, what if on the off chance they're not good? What if all this hype about, you know, James Williams and let's say Daryl Jackson doesn't ever live up to
his thing. He was a disappointment in the early part of the season last year.
Exactly. So what if he's a disappointment again? Like, what happens then? We have nothing else to turn to. That's my concern. That's why I say that, I think this ranking is fair.
Yeah, and then the next one here for linebacker, this is a little weird, Michael. Now, there's a little separation between the two here. Athlon has us as the sixth best in the ACC, third best by Phil Steele, and 34th in the country. Now, you know, it's strange times, Michael. This feels weird to even say out loud, but like one of the position groups I'm most confident in 2025 is the linebacker room. It is pretty crazy here. And there's a stat that's interesting that I'm going to give you later on in the show when we talk a little bit about the position groups here. But man, third in the ACC, I love it. I love to hear it, man. I think you got a lot of pieces here. I think you got some proven veterans. When you talk about Elijah Herring and Stephon Thompson, I think you got some of the other guys that are the returning, the Omar Grahams, the Blake Nicholsons that have shown you their high upside. You know, you got the Caleb LaValle kid who's showed out in their bowl game at UNC, still a young guy there. I think you got enough pieces in this linebacker room that, man, I feel pretty daggone good about them. Now, you know, we've talked about this before. We talked about this on the last show. I don't know that you have a Butkus Award winner contender or anything like that. But I think this reminds me a lot kind of like the 23 linebacker room where it's just you got a lot of solid linebackers, right? A lot of really just good college linebackers. And so, man, I'm excited for this linebacker room this year. And so a top three in the ACC by Phil Steele, I'll take it all day long. Let's go.
Listen, we haven't been able to say that in how long, Jesse?
Yeah, like, we pray for times like these.
as you like to say. Yes, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to Omar Graham stepping it up again. You know, he got better as the year went on last year. Obviously, Blake Nicholson's back. And then, of course, the transfers. You got Juice. You got those guys. You got the new transfers that are coming in. Yeah, I'm actually – this is the one segment that I feel like – and you know what I always say about linebackers? I don't need you to be a Butkus Award winner. I just need you to be in the right place at the right time, triggering on instinct, not on hesitation, but triggering, feeling the right gaps. Just show up right where you need to be. If you're in the gap, hopefully you'll make the tackle.
Yep.
Gosh, we got so sick of linebackers like just being like, don't touch me.
Right.
You know? You know, and so it's so good that they we are now walking into a season where we don't have to worry, at least preseason wise, we don't feel like we have to worry about the linebacker play going into the year. So I agree with the ranking there.
Yeah. And a lot of times last year, it's like, man, they fired in the gap. It was just the wrong one
on the wrong side
of the field. So I really like this linebacker room, and I agree with that assessment there as well. So talking about on the back end here for the DBs, sixth best secondary in the ACC, according to Athlon. Again, Athlon, you know what, man? This is why nobody reads your magazine anyway. Phil Steele has you at second in the ACC, and this is what I like as well. 29th in the country, top 30 unit here. So, man, when I look at these rankings, right, for the DB, I think – the one thing I wonder about Athlon, and I will at least say this, because they don't give an explanation like Phil Steele does. Athlon, I will say this about their magazine, and you know, as most of you, some of you guys know, we actually used to do a preseason magazine here at Plant the Spear. I used to do it by myself there for a while, and it was a lot of work. And so you have to really work hard to get these things done. So I'm not taking away from what they do from being able to create that amount of content. But Athlon is usually the first one to hit the newsstands. And so sometimes they have things in there that don't get factored in, like maybe some late transfers. And so I'm wondering if they don't have the Jeremiah Wilson in there, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. Because the eighth best, man, I think he's going to be one of the best DBs in the ACC. I think he's probably the best player on Florida State's roster in 2025. The kid is just talented. He's a ball hawk. And so I think when you talk about him, and then I think when you look over at the other side, with Jabril Rawls and some of the other guys, Edwin Joseph, the guys that you saw last year that were competing, that were actually doing pretty good as freshmen, you know, that just really, or sophomores that really didn't get a whole lot of playing time. I think you don't have to, because of Jeremiah Wilson, you don't have to rely on them. You can kind of pick the cream of the crop for your other corner there. The one thing that draws me back from giving us a really high rating here, I don't know that maybe two is right, and I don't know that six is right either. I think maybe three or four sounds a little bit better. It's just because we have question marks at safety.
Right.
And you're running a three high safety defense where I think you want to feel like you can count on Shaheem Brown, but can you after last year? Earl Little Jr. Is a very high upside prospect after making the switch to safety last year, but how good is he? You know, and so then you got to find that third safety slot. So I think the talent that you have at DB, because remember, Surtain has been recruiting his pants off the last few years. I think when you look at the talent that you have at your disposal and the coaching that you have in the secondary, that's why I see this being one of the better units in the conference. You know, again, with the question marks of safety, I don't know that two is right, but I definitely don't know that I'd put it all the way down at six in the ACC.
No, I would agree. Now, listen. You went out and you got a DB that had four interceptions from last year when your entire defense had four interceptions the entire year. So you basically went out and doubled your production there, right? Okay. So that alone should help you, you know, feel more confident about this. Now, listen, Florida State has actually had a really good defensive backfield for quite some time. I mean, you go back to 2022, they were only giving up 165 yards in the air in 2022. In 23, it went up a little bit, but it was only 179 yards. In 24, they were giving up a little bit more at 201 yards a game. But you have to understand, they didn't have to worry about really the air because they were running the ball all over us last year. Every opponent was, because we couldn't stop the run to save our lives, right?
Yeah.
And so when they were giving up, it's because we're having to bring the safeties down. We're having to go one-on-one coverage all the time. We couldn't run, you know, a lot of zone coverage. And when we tried to run zone coverage, we didn't know what we were doing. Thanks, Adam Fuller. And so I think this year with Tony White's defensive scheme, where you're going to have some exotic looks. You might have a three-man front. You might have a four-man front. You might have a 4-3-1 over front, right? You might have a bear look where you got two linebackers on the outside, the Will and the Sam coming down there, right? I mean, you have safeties playing in the linebacker spot. Like, this 3-3-5 defense is so exotic and multiple. I think it's going to help in the passing game. And then the great thing about the 3-3-5, which is also a concern, is that you have to have great safety play. So to your question about Shaheem, man, if Shaheem steps up this year, you could literally see a lockdown defensive backfield where now you're forcing the team to become one-dimensional, running the ball, which then you hope your linebackers and your defensive line and all the different blitzing can slow that down as well, too.
Right, and that's the thing, is I think you have the talent on the back end of safety. It's just, how's it going to look? Because we've seen Shaheem have good seasons. We've seen Earl Little look great in practice footage at Alabama. It's just, how are they going to do it on the field? But, yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you. Adam Fuller's pass defenses have always been pretty decent, right? They've been pretty good. It's just he was never great at stopping the run.
Yeah.
And Tony White is predicated on stopping the run and limiting the big pass. So we'll see how that goes as well. Now, the last thing I decided to throw on here was special teams. Athlon doesn't rank them. Phil Steele has us at 8th and 72nd in the country. Obviously, this is going to be – you're going to take a drop every time you lose the, you know, basically the two best specialists in the country, two of the best specialists in the country. Now, you still have Coach JP there who works his magic on the special team side of things, so it'll still be a decent unit. But, man, here's another interesting thing that I wanted to talk about with these position group rankings. So I started looking and I was reading through, you know, getting the list and everything of where I was taking my notes at. And I was like, okay, looking through, like, you know, the top teams. I'm like, all right, where's Florida State? I was like, oh, dang, we play them. Oh, dang, we play them too. Oh, gosh, we play them too. So I thought this would be interesting to see. This is food for thought, right? So out of the national rankings, according to Phil Steele here, Florida State plays three of his top 10 quarterbacks.
Yeesh.
Three of the top 10. Now, the next highest ranked is 28th, so it takes a big dip after those three. Running back, you do only play one of his top 10, but then you play five of the top 25 units. For wide receiver, you play two of the top 10, four of the top 25. Your offensive lines that you're going to face this season, you will face four of his top 10 offensive lines. And I do know that was Bama, Clemson, Miami, and I think maybe Pitt or somewhere in there. So four of his top 10 offensive lines. Defensive lines, you face four of the top 11, because I think the fourth team was there at 11, five of the top 20. That's a lot of good defensive lines that you're going to be facing. Linebacker groups, you're facing three of the top 10 and six of the top 28. DB, you're facing two of the top three.
Gosh.
Three of the top 10 and four of the top 25. So it's not an easy schedule by any means. Now, granted, you can guess the names by a lot of these guys.
Yeah, exactly.
So, man, I saw that. And, you know, what? Here's what's interesting. Some other quick notes on this that I wanted to provide. And this is why we say that Florida State has to do some overachieving this year, right? Because we talked about those big four games that, you know, in the beginning of the episode here. Well, Clemson, Bama, Miami, and Florida rank above Florida State in every position group with the exception of Miami at wide receiver, and Florida State is 22nd, Miami's 23rd. So you're one position behind us. So those big four games, now again, this is the expert's opinion. This is preseason stuff. This doesn't mean anything right now. All of this could change. But again, you're talking about those four big games kind of have you outgunned in almost every position group, according to Phil Steele. There's two. That's two. Put on the counter. That's two. And here's another thing that's interesting, man. When we talk about of those four big games, I think most people would agree that Bama and Clemson are your two toughest of those four. Well, Alabama ranks top 10 in every position group besides quarterback and running back for Athlon. And they are top 10 for Phil Steele. So basically, when you combine them like a power ranking, Alabama's top 10 in every position group nationally besides running back quarterback, because they're breaking in a new quarterback. Clemson is top 10 in every national position unit ranking in both for everything but running back. Wow. So Clemson looks absolutely loaded. So, man, we've talked about Florida State and kind of where you're falling this year. But in those four big games, man, they're awfully confident in what those guys are bringing to the table. So, man, again, that's why I say, like, that Bama game is going to be really tough. That Clemson game on the road at Death Valley is going to be really hard. But, man, you're going to have to do some overachieving. You're going to have to, you know, out-coach, out-scheme some of these teams if you want to pull an upset in one of those four games. You know, it's not to say that it doesn't happen. I'm just telling you what Phil Steele has in his magazine. So I'm not saying that that's the way it's going to end the season, but at least in the preseason talk, that's where it stands, man. I thought that was pretty interesting to see that, man. You got some tough opponents coming up this year on the schedule. Now, again, like we said, most of that is from those four big teams, which we pretty much already knew about, but it tells you how good those four teams are expected to be this year.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we already knew that this is what we're going to face. This is why those four games you always never want to say they're just automatic losses, but you don't go into them with a lot of confidence that you're going to be able to pull it off. So, you know, hey, Florida State, show up. We'll see who the best team is.
Yeah. And so the one other quick subject I want to talk about was individual awards here, which are all ACC selections. Athlon only has one Seminole landing on the first team all ACC list, and that is Daryl Jackson. They only give first team, so we're going to stop there with them. When you get to Phil Steele, he has zero first team all ACC players for Florida State. Second team would be Deuce Robinson and Daryl Jackson, along with Sam Singleton as a kick returner. Yeah. Third team is Jeremiah Wilson. And then fourth team, I don't know if I called him by the wrong name earlier or not. If I did, I apologize. I meant to say Jeremiah Wilson. And then the fourth team here would be Michael Pettis on the offensive line. So not a whole lot of individual awards for Florida State, which, you know, that does kind of follow along the vein, Michael, like we talked about the other day in the last episode, was Florida State does seem to have a lot of collection of good college football players, but they kind of lack some star power. Yeah. And so I think that's probably a little bit fair there as far as your national awards. Now, one of the other things that I think is fun that Phil Steele does, he does it through his computer system, however it calculates this, is stat projections. And so that's what we're going to talk about now as we get towards the tail end of this episode here. And we're going to start with offense. So stat projections, what he has Florida State in 2025, rushing offense is around 146 yards per game. Passing offense would average around 242.4 yards per game, and then a scoring offense of 31 points per game. Now, Michael, to me, this almost sounds a little bit backwards, right? When the Gus Malzahn on offense, yeah. I think you might be rushing for 242 yards a game, passing for 146 yards a game. But regardless of what the yardage ends up being, man, I do actually agree and like that scoring offense of around 31 points per game.
Be nice.
And what I did is when I went back and I kind of looked at where Gus was at, During his time at UCF in those 4 years, they did average 31.6 points per game. So that sounds about right. Now, keep in mind, some tougher competition at Florida State, but the talent equivalent balances itself out. You have more talent at Florida State to go against that tougher schedule with. Florida State last year was, of course, 15.4 points per game. Talking about falling down an elevator shaft.
Jeez.
But historically, even including that dumpster fire of a season, it's been 27.9 under Mike Norvell. So I think that 31 points per game does sound about right. Now, keep in mind, you also have two games in here with Kent State and East Texas A&M where realistically, hypothetically, however you want to say it, Michael, you should put up over 50 in both of those games. So that's probably going to bump your average way up. I would think in games against really tough defenses like Alabama and Clemson, you're probably not going to score 31 points naturally. But, man, I think at the end of the season when the dust settles, if you hit 31 points per game, I think Florida State's going to be in position to be around that 8-win mark like we talked about. And like I said, with Gus averaging 31.6 points per game there at UCF across all 4 years, I think I like how that number sounds.
Yeah, I do too. Listen, 31 points a game. If you're there, that means you're in ball games. That means you're going in the fourth quarter with a chance to win. More specifically that, man, if you could be in that 30 point range, it's giving you a chance to win. And yeah, because in the ACC, if you have a decent enough defense, 30 points should win you almost every game in the ACC. Right.
Truth.
If you have a decent defense, you should be able to walk out of that stadium knowing, okay, if we get the, I remember in 2023, I remember feeling that all the time. If we can get the 30, this game's over. Right.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think there were
Clemson and Miami are probably the only two you would worry about, right?
That you'd worry about that could get to 30 as well. But I just knew if we got, I remember when we went, when we were playing Duke that night, right? And I just kept thinking to myself, if we could just get to 30, if we get to 30, it's over because we have a decent enough defense that can prevent anything else from happening. And so I feel like going into this season, if our defense is decent enough, if we can get to 30, it will give us a chance to be in the game. I'm not saying we're going to win every game.
Right.
But it'd give us a chance to be in the game.
Right. And even then, man, obviously, you know, the back and forth with offense and defense, it changes things. You can't just say, well, if we had averaged 31 last year. But you look at, you averaged 31 last year, you won some games, man. That's not a two-win season for sure. So let's flip over talking about the defense here and talk about the stat projections for the defensive side of things. Rush D coming in at 136 rush yards per game on average. Pass D, 199.2. Scoring D, giving up 24.2 points per game next season. Now, these are pretty interesting numbers, man. You know, when you look at Tony White's defense, it is built heavily on stopping the run. Now, he has done pretty well, so you may want to say that rush defense number could be a little bit lower there. But again, you're talking about playing some tougher offenses in the ACC than the Big Ten. So that number probably sounds about right. Pass defense, I'm okay with that too. And, you know, to be honest, man, really, I'm not huge on yardage. I'm all about points because that is what wins and loses games. It doesn't really matter. So the 24.2 points per game, I also think sounds pretty fair. And the reason I say that is because you do have the teams like Alabama. Yes, I know they have quarterback questions. You do have Miami, who's going to have a good offense. You do have Clemson, who's probably going to have a really good offense this year. Right. And so when you talk about some teams like that, Florida could have a decent offense. There's going to be some games where you're going to give up some points, right? There's going to be a couple games where you're probably going to give up 30 plus. I think you should very well shut out probably a Texas A&M or East Texas A&M, should I say. Gosh, that'd be sweet if you could shut out Texas A&M too. But I think you might even look at a couple shutouts or you know, single-digit scores here when you talk about like a team like Wake Forest or Kent State. Tony White, I will say, over the last 2 years at Nebraska, did average 18.9 points per game allowed. So he's come in underneath that number, which has been really good. Florida State's defense last year gave up 28 points per game. And again, the defense wasn't terrible last year, man. They were just hamstrung by a god-awful offense. And so I think that 24-ish number is pretty fair, right? I think that's a pretty good number for Florida State. And really, when you talk about where, you know, where Florida State ends up, man, if you're scoring 31 and you're giving up 24 or less, man, I think you're going to end up where you want to be. You might be in some closer games than maybe you expected. But I think that's about where you want to be, and I think those are fair numbers.
Yeah, I think those are fair numbers. And listen, I think really what is going to be predicated on is, can this defense stop the big play? You know, I think one thing that you've pointed out several times is that while Nebraska has been in the top 20 defensive category, when they've played somebody with a decent offense,
Yeah,
they've struggled.
It's gotten away from them. Yep.
It's gotten away from them. And so can Florida State, which Tony White's going to face, Tony White is going to face some decent offenses this season. Like you said, we're going to face Clemson, right? They probably have the number one they have the number one quarterback in the ACC and probably one of the top five quarterbacks in the country. We're going to face Miami. Now, regardless of what you feel about Kasem Beck, you know, he was at Georgia. He was successful, yeah. Right?
He's good. So he's not good. Cam Ward, but he's good.
Not Cam Ward. He's not a scrambler, but he's good, right? You have DJ Lagway at Florida. Like, what is he going to look like this year? He was getting hot. I mean, you saw what he did against Florida State last season, yeah. Right? So you're going to face some really good quarterbacks. What happens when those offenses that can actually move the ball, what is that doing for you as far as your defense is concerned? That's where I really want to see the rubber meets the road for Tony White in that defense.
Yeah. Now, I will say I could see where the defense could be a little bit better if they stay healthy. Again, right. We worry about the depth, but I was just looking it up, man, and if you're at 31-24-2, that puts Florida State with about a top 40 offense based on last year. Looking at where the teams were at last year. That's a top 40 offense. And I think that sounds pretty good. You know, yeah. I mean, that's a Gus Malzahn. I don't expect it to be the number one offense. I would like to see it top 30, top 25 for sure. Yeah. But top 40, I think, gets you some wins there. The defense, maybe I could see going a little bit other way because 24.2 puts you about a top 60 defense. And I don't think that's great. And I think that Tony White, as far as coordinators go, I think that may be a little bit stronger, higher even than the Gus, than the offensive side of things. So, you know, maybe you see that. I'd like to see at least a top 40 defense, realistically. Yeah. Now, the top 40 defense is 22.9 points per game from last year. So only about a point and a half or so per game there you would need to improve. But, man, I think you want to be at least top 40 on both sides of the ball to try and end up where you want to be. So, now, a couple of other things that I want to talk about here are just some additional notes that I saw throughout his magazine that I thought were interesting and would be you guys would want to know about. And I think the biggest one, Michael, the one that stands out above the rest, because Phil Steele, I feel like, man, he's like us. He wants to throw on those garnet glasses. He wants to predict something big for Florida State. But he's also hesitant there as well because last year. But Florida State in 2025 is Phil Steele's most improved team for this season, which I like. He puts out a list usually of 11 teams. And why this seems significant is that Florida State was also on that most improved list in 2022. They weren't number one, but they were one of the top 11 on that team in 2022. And they doubled their win total from 5 to 10. Last year, 9 of his top 11 most improved teams for the year, again, this is coming into the year.
Okay.
9 of the teams he expected to be most improved went from a losing record to making a bowl.
Okay.
Now, granted, that could be 5-7 to 6-6, right? But still, I think with this year with Florida State, you know, when you talk about it in a nutshell here, when we talk about some of these things, Michael, is like, yeah, we'd love to play for the ACC championship. We'd love to be in the playoffs and all this stuff. But I think, man, at a minimum, your basement floor should be shooting for bowl eligibility, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So 9 out of 11 teams last year went from losing record to making a bowl. In 2022, 6 of the 11 teams on his most improved list ended up with double-digit wins.
Yeah.
This sounded pretty good, Michael. I like it. Over the past 15 years, he has named 277 teams to the most improved list that had a losing season the prior year.
Okay.
Of those teams, 189 or 68.2% made a bowl the following year. So that tells you it feels like a 68.2% chance that Florida State, historically speaking, should be in a bowl this year. And that's not including they are the number one team. And he's had some of his number one teams do some really big flip arounds in a year or so. So that's a big one there as well, too. The next one here is yards per point, which is basically how efficient your offense and or defense was. Like, how many yards did it take you to get per point? Well, Michael, here's something that doesn't come as a surprise. Florida State made the bad offense list. Wow. Imagine that.
Hello.
Exactly. So anyway, in this yards per point list, basically, he kind of says that, like, the ones that are over a certain amount, the ones that go over a certain metric, is typically abnormally inefficient. And so if you can just get back to, like, baseline efficiency here, since 1990, 63.3% of the teams that made his bad offense list that's going up the next year had a stronger record the following year. And, of course, Florida State made that offense list. So, again, a 63.3% chance tells you historically – Florida State should do better this year. So I'm liking all this stuff. And then the last one here is something that we mentioned on a previous show, the 4 data-driven reasons why Florida State should be better in 2025. I've encouraged you guys to go back and watch that as well. And that is turnover margins. You've heard us talk about it before. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this as well. But Florida State was minus 16 in 2024. That is butt cheeks, Michael. That is, that is terrible. Since 1990, 416 teams have finished with a turnover margin in the double digits. Oof. And that is the negative double digits. Of those teams, 278 or 67% improved the following year. 77% had the same or better, but we don't want to stay the same. We're trying to get better.
Right.
So that tells you, man, that's all 65-ish, 63-plus percent chances that Florida State should be better this year. Now, again, when you're coming from the basement, it's not hard to get better. But these are all things that seem like if they can just go back to the mean, Florida State should be much better. And then one more here that I wanted to throw on about strength of schedule. Michael, this is also something that, remember, we talked about in that 4 data-driven reasons why Florida State should be better in 2025.
Right.
So another one was strength of schedule. Now, he had us with the 75th strength of schedule this year, right? But last year, he had us, and I like how he does this. He goes back and he retroactively calculates the previous year's schedule, because you do a lot of these things based on what you think a team's going to be. Right. So he goes back and actually looks. Florida State's schedule, according to Phil Steele, last year in 2024 was the fourth toughest schedule in the country. When you look at, again, every single team besides Charleston Southern made a bowl game.
Yeah.
What is significant about this, Michael, is there has been a drop of 71 spots in your strength of schedule ranking from what you played last year to what he expects you to be this year. That is the biggest drop in the FBS of strength of schedule of any team.
Wow.
That is working in your advantage. You made his going up box. He does a couple of explainers there on the schedule page. So you're in his going up box, which over the past 20 years, these are teams that had a big change in strength of schedule. 80% of those teams had a better or equal record than the year prior. So again, man, I'm telling you, these things from being the most improved team, from the inefficient offense getting back, if it can get back to normal, from the strength of schedule, from the turnover margin, these are all things that I love that Phil says that point to the direction of Florida State being better. Now, again, some of these I do question how much better they think we're going to be when you're only predicting us to not have a ton there, a ton of wins. But, man, those are all things I thought FSU fans would find interesting here, and they all point in the up direction, which I like.
Yeah, I love the fact that for his most improved, that, you know, he has a really good track record of being able to predict the most improved. They get back to a bowl game. So I like that. Again, we talked about this a little bit earlier. Depending on what the bowl game is, that matters. I do want to talk about this interception thing, because this one has fascinated me. I went back and looked at the last 12 years of Florida State when it comes to interceptions, okay? In the last 12 years, Florida State has had six seasons where they've had 10-plus interceptions, okay?
Thrown or received? Like, we picked it off?
Like, we picked it off. Florida State's defense has picked it off, okay? So there have been six seasons in the last 12 years that Florida State has picked off 10-plus passes, okay? In those six seasons, four of them resulted in Florida State winning 10 or more games, okay? And two of them resulted in Florida State only winning five games.
Those are
anomalies. Okay. So in 2021, Florida State picked off 14 passes and only went 5-7. In 2018, Willie Taggart's first year, Florida State picked off 12 passes and only won five games. Okay. But my point is that when Florida State picks off 10 or more passes, the chances of them winning 10 games is significant in the last 10 years. Can I tell you the last time Florida State? So in 2020, Florida State picked off eight passes. In 2021, they picked off 14 passes, but they didn't win 10 games. Weird. In 2022, they picked off eight passes, but won 10 games. Weird. In 2023, they picked off 10 passes and won 13 games. In 2024, they picked off four passes and won two games. This is the conundrum we're in with Mike Norvell. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny while you're saying that, I went back and looked. So Tony White's defense last year at Nebraska picked off 11 passes. The year before that, they picked off nine. So we're either going to be, our average is 10. So, man, I do think that's going to make such a big difference this year. You just talk about, I think, yes, the four games that you have that are the tough games, those are going to be tough. But I think that strength of schedule and just getting back to not being a complete crap show on Saturdays, you know, and actually having a decent turnover margin and being a decently efficient defense or offense, excuse me, I think are going to play big in the Florida State's turnaround. So the last thing that I want to talk about from the expert's opinion here is just a quick overview of what Phil Steele had to say about each position group. Now, we've already talked a lot about our position group, so we're going to kind of shorten these up a little bit because we are running you guys a little bit long here. But let's jump in, Michael. So starting off with quarterback, basically just going to paraphrase what he says, because he talks a lot about the past leading into the future. So we don't really need we want to leave the past in the past. We know about that. But he did talk about how the rushing production dropped at BC in the new offense for Thomas Castellanos. But he does think that he should thrive in Malzahn's offense. Now, again, we talked about this earlier in the position group rankings. I wholeheartedly agree with that. How high that ceiling is, I don't know, because he does have him ranked at the ninth best quarterback in the ACC. But again, man, I do think Thomas Castellanos is set up for success from the quarterback position there. Running back here said the room has six what he calls VHTs. Now, these are very highly touted, and each one has a different allotment of players for each position group. Just know these are basically kind of like blue chip players, right? They're good recruits. Six very highly touted players in that room, top portion of their position group is essentially what that means, and can only be more productive in the Malzahn run heavy offense. Well, that's because we didn't run the ball basically at all last year. So, of course, there's only, like you said, only one way to go, and that is up. Wide receiver here, he talked about the drops in 2024. We know that plagued this team. He did say that the talked about the new additions there as well and said FSU has seven VHTs in this position group, the very highly touted players. And despite losing all their top guys from last year, they should be more productive. Also said the tight end group could be the strength of this offense. Which, Michael, you know, I actually don't disagree with that. When you look at Randy Pittman last year, he was UCF's number two in receiving yards last year with 416. You got Landon Thomas there as well. You got some really talented guys. And here's a fun fact, man. Actually, and this was interesting because, you know, we talk a lot about this run-heavy offense. We talk about how Gus, you know, I think a lot of people think this is just going to be a triple option offense, essentially. In 2022, UCF attempted 451 passes. That's more than any single year of Mike Norvell's offense has attempted at Florida State. They only broke 400 one time in 2023 when we knew they couldn't really run the ball that well, and they had to rely on the pass. They threw it 434 times. So Gus Malzahn is not scared to throw the ball if it works.
If it works.
So I thought that was a fun fact that you guys can use maybe on a trivia night or something like that to keep a line there. So now talking about the offense. In 2023, Florida State had the most experienced offensive line in all of college football with 206 starts. They averaged 162 rush yards per game and allowed 17 sacks. And remember, 2023 is where we started to see some of the cracks with that offensive line.
Yeah.
In 2024, they still had 190 combined starts, but only managed 90 rush yards per game and gave up 49 sacks while using 10 different combinations of offensive lines. Yeah. That is just unbelievable, man. You want to point to the number one reason why this team was in bad shape last year? That is it. That offensive line, just you couldn't do anything. You couldn't get out of your own way to run or pass the ball. And so he mentions that you brought in four new starters, plus you get Richie Leonard back, new offensive line coach too, which he did not mention. But I think that's going to be just as much as the guys you brought in is the guy you got leading the guys that you brought in. Career starts this year for Florida State are combined at 129, so still a very experienced offensive line, and they averaged 322 pounds, so you got some massive road graders up front. He does expect them to be much better, but, Michael, you can't be much worse.
That's right. So that's right.
That's a lot of what he said about the offensive side here. As far as the defense goes, he talked about the change in personnel the last 2 years because you've had a ton of turnover from that 23 and the 24 team. The 23 was mostly because they all went to the NFL. 24 was mostly because y'all just get out of here.
Yeah.
You know, go and get, man.
Go and get on out of here.
Go and get. But he thinks they won't be up to the 2023 standards, which is fair. You don't have Jared Verse. You don't have Braden Fisk. But we don't know who we got quite yet. But they will be improved and has seven VHTs, very highly touted in there. So I like that as well. Here's an interesting stat that I alluded to earlier about the linebackers.
Okay.
And he puts this in every magazine. So I think he's waiting for the renaissance of Florida State's linebacker room. Between 1992 and 2015, Florida State had a linebacker selected first or second team all ACC in all but 3 years.
Jeez.
Then Florida State went 7 years without one until 2023 when they broke the streak.
Yeah.
Now, he said that group in 23, he actually said last year, the group wasn't bad despite the record. And our linebacker group wasn't terrible later in the season.
Right.
They have four VHTs, added three quality transfers, and do have some returning experience. So it sounds like he actually thinks our linebacker room will be pretty decent better. There. Yeah. And so then defensive back went from number one in his pass defense ratings in 2023 all the way down to number 80 in 2024. That is a massive drop. Lost AZ and Fentrell, but has about everyone else back and should make a stock market type of climb in his pass defense ratings. Now, he didn't mention Jeremiah Wilson, but he does have him listed as a starter, so I'm sure he factored into that because I think, again, that's going to be the biggest boost in your secondary of all offseason. Special teams, top 30 unit the past 2 years. Losing those two guys obviously hurt you, but he still thinks they'll be talented, you know, with some good replacements and JP at the helm there. On offense, he says they had one of the biggest fall-offs ever last year, cutting their production in more than half. But with Gus Malzahn as the OC and all the units projected to be better, he expects them to at least double their points per game last year from 15 up to 31.
Yeah.
And on the defense, he talked about Tony White's four consecutive top 25 defenses. That's total defense, all with all three units expected to be better. So the defense should be improved. Now, to wrap it up with what Phil Steele had to say in his magazine, in 2025, this is crazy, man. This is wild. He's talking about the swings of Florida State,
okay,
which we've all been present for, so we all know about. Michael, from 2012 to 2016, Florida State was 59-9 with three ACC championships, a national championship, and a playoff berth. What a time to be alive.
Oh, what a time.
Now, from 17 to 21, they went 26-33.
Oof.
That is absolutely wild, isn't it? So basically what he says for 2025 is he expects them to be stronger on offense with a solid defense. The turnover margin, the yards per point, the easier schedule all factor into a much better season. And interesting point, he does not think Mike Norvell is on a hot seat because of his buyout, which I would disagree with.
I would disagree too.
I understand because of the buyout. I get that. But I think that seat is hot. But here's what I like about what Phil says, too. Phil's got a little confidence in Florida State. He says, and he won't be either way after a solid season in 2025. So he thinks Mike Norvell cools off the hot seat talk with a successful 2025 campaign. So I like that, too. Athlon expects much of the same, but they do note the tough games of Bama and Miami. Says at least you get Miami at home. And then ending the season with three of the final four games on the road, including trips to Clemson, NC State, and Florida. Questions how high the ceiling is going to be, although they'll be improved after a 2-10 season. So, you know, some of these, man, I think these are very fair, right? To kind of bring it home on this, I think when you do look at all the things, the signs that we've talked about, the things that we went through in those previous episodes, Florida State should be better. You should have a average to above average offense and a pretty good defense. And I think all of those things combined lead you to a solid 2025 season. So I do agree with that. And I also understand Athlon's talk of, man, you do have three of the last four games on the road. And those are three of four teams that are pretty darn good and offer a pretty tough environment to go win in. So I understand that side of it as well, man. But I think all in all, I don't hate what a lot of these things were projecting. Some of them I do disagree with. I think some of them should be viewed more as 2025 individually rather than what can 2025 be because of 2024 when you've had so much change.
Yeah.
But all in all, man, I think it is going to be a solid season for Florida State. And I don't think some of these are too far off base.
Yeah, I don't think some of those. I love Phil Steele's confidence. I love that he feels like Florida State's on a hot seat. I disagree that Mike Norvell is not on a hot seat because, yes, he is. It's very clear he is.
Them cheeks are on fire right now.
Cheeks are on fire. You're right. I mean, listen, I love the confidence of Phil Steele. I think I love that he feels like Florida State's going to be better. I disagree that Mike Norvell isn't on the hot seat. He is on the hot seat, man. It is burning up for him. He has to win, and he has to win not big, but he's got to get 8 games. I think anything below 8 games is a disaster for Florida State. Now, what you don't want is them to be in 7-5 because now you're in like limbo land, right? You'd rather either, we've talked about this before, you either win 8 games or more or win 6 games or less. And so it's super clear for that. But I do think Florida State is poised to win eight games. I feel confident in the eight-game call. I feel like these units will be better. I feel like we'll better have a better offensive dynamic because of the run game, because we won't ask Thomas Castellanos to try to be Chris Winkie to throw it all over the field.
Yeah,
I think the defense will be better as far as interceptions and creating turnovers, something we weren't good at last year. And I like our specialists just because I like JP, who has been a special teams guru for us. So I feel like 8-5, 8-4 is a really good, decent season for Mike Norvell to keep his job and to move on.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of like I said the other day on that College Huddle show, right? The seat's hot, but the buyout is also a real thing, right? And I know a lot of fans don't want to accept that, but I think it's like he's sitting on a bag of ice on the stove, right? The buyout is the bag of ice. It's going to buy you some time.
That's right. That's
but it's only going to last so long, right? That's eventually, right, that buyout's going to go away and it's not going to be enough to save your job.
That's right.
But I think it is a, you know, it's a buffer at 7-5 this year because it's a real thing. But I think you know, 5-7, yeah, you're having that conversation for sure. So that's what the experts say about Florida State in 2025. Like it, love it, hate it, agree, disagree. Let us know in the comments if you're watching on YouTube here. Now, we have one last thing that we're going to end the show on. You guys know this was the new segment that we displayed last week, or debuted, I guess what I'm looking for, last week. And it was a little bit of a silly one last week. We were just kind of having some fun with it. This is something that's just a kind of a random question. Maybe it relates to the show topic. Maybe it doesn't. It's a question for us to have some fun with. This one, I thought, Michael, we would keep this in the vein of 2025 because we've just spent so much time talking about the 2025 season. And we're going to have a little fun with it. And we're going to tie it into Florida State as well. And so what this is going to be this week, we're going to share. And again, this is a quick segment. We're not going to spend long on this. It's just to close the show out here. So our fun question to end this is, Michael, we just talked a lot about 2025. And what Florida State may or may not be during that season. But let's just say you found a magic lamp laying on the side of the road and you get one wish. You could add one player from a past FSU team to the 2025 team. Who would it be and why?
Ooh, man, that's so good.
That's a tough one because there's a lot of greats. And so I'll let you go first.
All right, 2 minutes of the clock. Here we go. I would say that bringing Timmy Jernigan back to FSU for the 2025 season would be an absolute game changer, plain and simple. I mean, you're talking about a guy who was a wrecking ball in the middle when FSU won it all in 2013 and then went on and had an incredible NFL career winning a Super Bowl. And I mean, just plug him into the current D-line now, right? And you instantly get a tough, no-nonsense anchor who eats up blocks, blows up running plays, makes life miserable for quarterbacks. And it's not just a stat. He brings a championship swagger to him, and that's what they need in that locker room, right? And so my player would be is Timmy Jernigan for depth reasons, for so many other reasons, but mostly because he's a dog.
Yeah, I think that's a great pick because, like you said, not only are you getting a dog on the field, it's the mentality and the leadership that you're getting in the locker room that would be huge. And, you know, this is something we've talked about before where you've seen how a dominant defensive line makes a difference at Florida State from 23 to 24. That had a lot to do with it, too. You know, we put a lot of blame on the offensive line, but that defensive line had a lot to do with it. So getting guys like that, man, would be huge. So for me, you know, Michael, I think back of all the great names. And I, also, you have to put it in context of 2025. Every team's needs are differently. So this is why you can't just pick, you know, the Charlie Ward or something like
James
that.
James Winston.
That's what that you might want a Jameis Winston, but how is he going to look in Gus's offense? Would he Jameis? So you get the point, what I'm saying here. You know, I thought about Jalen Ramsey because the dude's just elite. I thought about LaMarcus Joyner. I thought about Derwin James because of how FSU is going to use their safeties this year and that three high safety look and how you could use that rangy guy on the back end of your defense. Of course, a dominant defensive lineman like a Timmy Jernigan or a Jared Verse would set this defense off, Michael. I thought about all of those guys. I even thought about maybe P-Dub at wide receiver.
Come on.
Because you also get him as a specialist, which would be huge. Jordan Travis, we both agreed, would be great in this offense.
You would light this offense up.
But to me, Michael, I think the answer is clear. And I'm going with Dalvin Cook.
DC!
Because Dalvin Cook in Gus Malzahn's offense would just be unstoppable, I feel like. I mean, you think about – the reason I say this is because, you know, when you talk about Jordan Travis at quarterback, right, he got Gus got Auburn to a national championship with a converted DB.
That's right.
At quarterback. But what he needs is a good running back to run the ball, to help this offense move. And Dalvin Cook put up mind-blowing numbers behind butt-average offensive lines. And so if you even get average offensive line out of this group that you got in 2025, I think Dalvin Cook would set it off. You've seen R.J. Harvey the last couple of years at UCF put up just ridiculous running back numbers. And so you see what that kind of next-level running back can do in a Gus Malzahn offense. You look at his last year, Dalvin Cook at Florida State. He put up 2,250 all-purpose yards and 20 touchdowns in 2016, man. If you put him on this team in that offense, I think for me personally, there's a lot of greats that you could add, but your best bang for buck adding a dominant FSU player from the past has to be Dalvin Cook at running back. Ooh. Because of the system you're running.
Ooh, let me just say this real quick. I know it's a two-minute drill. We're like at the last play of the game. Trey Mason, okay?
Yeah.
Played against Florida State in the national championship game. 317 carries, 1,816 yards, averaged 5.7 yards a carry, 23 touchdowns. Compare that to with Nick Marshall, who had 172 carries for 1,068 yards, 6.2 yards a carry, 12 touchdowns, both in the Gus Malzahn offense. Thomas Castellanos, right? Gavin Salchuk, right? So, yeah, a Dalvin Cook in this era, holy cow.
Yeah, you would be running all over some fools. So, and I just want to see him run all over Miami again anyway.
Exactly.
But that's going to be it for the show, guys. We appreciate you watching. If you have someone that you would like to add from the past, one of the Florida State greats, and boy, there's a lot to choose from. So let us know in the comments if you're watching on YouTube. Also, drop a like and subscribe if you enjoy this content. Again, guys, we are going to be rolling out as much content as we have time to permit for you guys before the season gets here next month. So make sure you drop a like and subscribe. Consider joining if you'd like to be a member of the channel. Rate and review on the podcast helps us reach other Noles fans. You can also check out everything we do over on our website at plantthespear.com. So that's it for this one, guys. We appreciate you watching, and we'll catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles.